श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्ट सपितं येन उत्तरे स्वयं उपकदामायं दति सर्वमिति वंशकपचपिक्षुभ्यश्च कृतसिंहवयुश्च प्रतीक्षणं कमलेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Reading from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, wherein Krishna is telling Arjuna how to practice yoga. And when Krishna is telling Arjuna how to practice yoga, he's basically telling him the process of Ashtanga yoga, which requires incredible self-discipline and full determination, and rigid adherence to so many very, very strict and specific practices. And one has to be under great guidance, and one has to live a very austere and lonely life. And he's continuing this. But if one, this description, but if one masters this type of yoga, one becomes extremely powerful. And of course the danger of becoming powerful is that one becomes enamored. What does enamored mean?
Enchanted
by one's own powers, and not understand that these powers are actually gifts and given. Now, implied in the concept that the powers are given is that they are given to you by someone. So that someone who is giving, or that entity or being or whatever, we don't know at this point, but that someone who is giving the powers, he has those powers. That means he is more powerful than you. And how powerful that one is, one doesn't know. So in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes how to attain all these powers, or how all these mystic powers are attained from Krishna by specific type of meditations. Because Krishna has all powers, and his nature contains all things. So by making one's consciousness one with a particular element or aspect of Krishna's nature, one gains that power. That's what it basically describes in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. By making one's consciousness one, harmonizing one's consciousness fully through meditation on one aspect of Krishna's nature, a powerful aspect of Krishna's nature, one attains one of the major and minor mystic powers. And then that chapter concludes that one shouldn't endeavor for this, because there is a tendency to become enchanted by the power and forget the supreme source of power. And therefore, in his purport to the last verse we read, Srila Prabhupada said, the best practice of yoga in this age is Krishna consciousness, which is not baffling. What does baffling mean?
Confusing.
And it, or even a little more than confusing, but bewildering in that sense. It will confuse us and bewilder us into thinking that which is valuable, or forget that which is valuable in favor of that which is not so valuable. And then we are bewildered or baffled or confused. And what Prabhupada said is very interesting. A Krishna conscious person, this is the process of of going beyond all the material impediments. Material impediments means things that will enchant us and make us forget Krishna. So one has to be very fixed on the goal. So so he doesn't become waylaid by the obstacles to where he is going. Because it's just like, if you, can you imagine our friend here, if he has to walk through a candy store that sells so many different varieties of candy and also has so many different kinds of computers and movies and video games and this and that, and he has to walk from this end to that end, and it's very, very long. And if you don't keep your mind just on where you're going, you're going to say, oh, I just want to look at what that is just for a second, and then a second, and then you're gone. And that second, oh, how about that one right over there, that's very similar, and then over there, and that day. And then we're lost. So one has to fix one's mind on the goal. So it is very difficult when practicing a very arduous process. Arduous means difficult. Difficult to perform process, like Astanga Yoga. But Prabhupada says it's very easy in Krishna consciousness, because a Krishna conscious person is so happy in his occupation, in his service to Krishna, that he does not aspire, he does not want any other happiness. And there are many impediments, obstacles on other paths, but there's no problem in executing karma yoga or bhakti yoga. Now what do you think of that? What do you think?
Not so simple, happy to say that.
What? What do you mean that it's not so simple? Prabhupada says there's no problems in executing karma yoga or bhakti yoga. And a Krishna conscious person is so happy in his occupation that he does not aspire after any other happiness.
Maybe we're aspiring to be Krishna conscious persons.
Yes, maybe, yeah, we're not. As you're saying, it's not so simple, but we're not yet Krishna conscious persons. And we're not yet quite executing karma yoga or bhakti yoga, but we're like trying to get on the train. Something like that. Because if one is on, when one is on the train, then there's no problem in getting the destination. But we keep getting on the train, and maybe this isn't quite, maybe it's the wrong train we think, and we get off the train, or what's that over there? What's on television over there? Let me just check that for a little while and see what that is. I wanted to see what that is. So, in other words, Prabhupada also said something very nice in this purport. As long as the material body exists, raise your hand if your material body exists. Yeah, okay. Raj Kishore, does your material body exist? Yes or no?
Yes.
As long as the material body exists, one has to meet the demands of the body. You can't, like, say that. Make believe it doesn't exist because I'm a soul. It doesn't work like that. Namely, eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. But a person who's in pure bhakti yoga or in Krishna consciousness does not arouse the senses while meeting the demands of the body. He doesn't meet the demands of the body in such a way that his senses and his mind become disturbed. This is someone who is in pure bhakti yoga. Rather, he accepts the bare necessities of life, making the best use of a bad bargain. He has to act with his body, and his body has its needs according to the particular body he has. So he does that, but he doesn't overdo that, doesn't take advantage of the fact that he has a material body. He doesn't take advantage and turn that. He doesn't turn it into a disadvantage. That was something that Prabhupada used. Making the best use of a bad bargain. We have a bad bargain, means we're in the material world. It's difficult. It's difficult. And it should make the best use of the difficult situation, but not increase the difficulties. He is callous, means doesn't care about incidental occurrences. Listen to this. He is callous. What's a better definition of callous? Indifferent, yes. Towards incidental occurrences. Incidental means something that happens. That he hasn't planned to happen, but it just happens. He's indifferent. He doesn't care. Now, what are the examples of the things, the occurrences that he doesn't care about? Such as accidents. Raise your hand if you've ever been in an accident. Wow. We had people who almost drowned last time, and now people are... What kind of an accident were you in particular?
I was driving like...
In Bombay?
No, in Adelaide.
Oh.
I was driving and I hit Honda CBR.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a tree that was moving and following you. Okay. He's callous towards these things. Accidents, disease, scarcity. It means if doesn't have his own needs. And even the death of a most dear relative. In other words, he doesn't let these things disturb his own purpose of life, his own Krishna consciousness. He's so fixed. But he is always alert. So he's callous on one side, but always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness of bhakti yoga. He knows that what he wants to do is to please Krishna. And that's all he wants to do, because he's in pure devotional service. Accidents never deviate him from his duties. Agama payino anityas tamstitiksasavarata. He endures, tolerates all such incidental occurrences because he knows that they come and go and do not affect his duties. In this way he achieves the highest perfection in yoga practice. That means he has his mind so focused on his goal and he just keeps moving and executing the process of Krishna consciousness, and he just keeps moving towards his goal, regardless of what happens on this side and that side. He just continues in his devotional service. And then, Prabhupada's going to tell in his purport, Sri Acharya's also tell, a little pastime that gives a indication of the mood in which one should execute Krishna consciousness. So the next verse is, one should engage in the practice of devotional service with nishchaya, determination and faith. Determination and faith. And not be deviated from the path. An obvious point, when you call it a path takes you from here to there. So if you're you're going on the path from here to there, and if you become deviated and go off the path, are you going to get to your destination? Certainly not. You'll get to some destination, but it won't be the destination you had gotten on the path to attain. One should not be deviated from the path. So one should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with
determination
and faith, and not be deviated from the... Yes, very good. From the path. One should abandon... So this is what one should do, and here's what one shouldn't do, basically. Or abandon, without exception, all material desires born of mental speculation. Such an interesting concept. Well, my material desires aren't born of mental speculation, so I don't have to abandon those. And control all the senses on all sides by the mind. The strength of one's powerful and fixed, firm, determined, faithful mind. Now, why does Prabhupada say that abandon all material desires born of mental speculation? Why are kamam, chakram, sankalpa? Sankalpa, pavavan, kamam, chaktva. Sankalpa means your, basically what your mind focuses on. Material mind grabs. That's why it's mental speculation, because the material mind, it holds on to something. I want that, desiring something, and it's thinking that it's going to bring what? Happiness. But it isn't. It's just the speculation of the mind. The mind starts grabbing onto it and then causes the physical body, the senses, to grab onto it, thinking that it's going to bring pleasure. But it's not. It's just all occurring in the mind. All occurring in the mind, because the senses and the sense objects don't have anything to do with the person, actually. So previously Krishna said, indriyasya indriyasya te raga dvesa tayasya paripantana, they're stumbling blocks, the combining of the senses and the sense objects, even though attachment and aversion, I want it and I don't want it, exist, but don't fall under the control of this, because it is stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So the same point here. Give up. How strong this is. If you read it. One should abandon, give up, without exception. What do you think about that? Without exception. All material desires born of mental speculation. And you can keep your desires that are not born of speculation, but you should follow your desires that are born not of the mind, but of the soul, of you. Those you should hold dear. We don't become desireless. The devotee has unlimited desires, and they're all in relationship with the unlimited, in service of Krishna. We have to become filled with desires, spiritual desires. So what do you think of this verse?
Didn't give him much room to move.
Only forward, it seems. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very young. Very straight path. One has to be very determined and faithful to be this, so determined, and to be that determined has to be so faithful. So we'll read from the second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport, and he gives an example. As for determination, one should follow the example of the sparrow. How big is a sparrow? As opposed to an emu. You have seen emu?
I don't know emu.
Emu is something like that. That's the top part also, feathers and everything. They're very tall, two legs, but he's much more intelligent. They're not very intelligent. But they're very big, very tall. But a sparrow is very little bird, very small bird. Yes, about, no. And one should follow the example of the sparrow who lost her eggs in the waves of the ocean. A sparrow laid her eggs on the shore of the ocean, but the big ocean carried away the eggs on its waves. The sparrow became very upset and asked the ocean to return her eggs. The ocean did not even consider her appeal because she's just a little sparrow. So the sparrow decided to dry up the ocean. Now what do you think of that?
Not possible.
Not possible. I mean, it is very foolish. I mean, it's foolish to think, I'm going to dry up the ocean. She began to pick out the water in her small beak. And everyone laughed at her for her impossible determination. The news of her activity spread.
Did you hear? The sparrow is going to dry up the ocean with her beak.
Tell your brother, and you can, when you call home next time, you can tell your mother also, and everyone can laugh. The news of her activities spread, and at last, Garuda, the gigantic bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, heard it. He became compassionate towards his small sister bird, and so he came to see the sparrow. Garuda was very pleased by the determination of the small sparrow, and he promised to help. Thus Garuda at once asked the ocean to return her eggs, lest he himself take up the work of the sparrow. The ocean was frightened and returned the eggs. Thus the sparrow became very happy by the grace of Garuda. What do you think of that pastime story? What do you think? Yes.
Krishna is not impossible to achieve.
Yeah. I don't have so many things in mind. I'm just trying to understand what you've heard.
You tried to ask me that?
What else? What do you think?
I think, for example, the devotees. And the devotees hard to achieve that prema love. And then the devotees have a prema. And then we will help that devotee to achieve that kind of...
Who will help? If that devotee who's struggling, what quality does he have to have?
What quality?
Should he have to get the help? Mm. What quality must he have, the struggling one? What quality? Determination?
Yeah, determination.
Yeah. And therefore...
And faith, actually.
And faith, yeah. Yes, too. How could you have determination unless you have faith?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you think of this story, though? Is it a real story? Is a story is it something that really happened? Or is it something that we just tell to give us encouragement and direction? Can such things happen? The sparrow says to the ocean, "Give me back my eggs." The ocean doesn't even hear. And then Garuda and everyone is talking about it. Who's talking about it? Everyone. And then Garuda comes, this huge giant bird comes. And then when Garuda talks to the ocean, "Give her back her eggs." And the ocean says, "Yes, Prabhu," because the ocean is afraid. So what do you think of this kind of a story? Is it just a story or is it real? Huh?
Very appropriate story.
You avoided my question.
Did Prabhupada say he has a story on this connection?
He says, "One should follow, as for determination, one should follow the example of the sparrow, who lost her eggs in the waves of the ocean. Now this story, I don't have it with me, obviously, but I think it's probably from one of the Puranas or something. The Acharyas tell it. I don't remember which one, whether it was Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur or Baladeva Dibhusa. But can such things actually happen in this world, or are they just stories? Why do you think they can?
Possible happen.
I mean, of course you know, because you're from the Philippines. Things like this happen every day in the Philippines. Yes or no? Very frequently. Yes or no? Yeah, something like this is not, if you come from Perth, you know, it's something very exceptional, but if you come from the Philippines, it's not so exceptional.
That's so surprising.
No. What do you why do you think it can happen?
No, I just think of doing the when Ram was on the summit and Buzz, who, or even Hanuman, who was a monkey, but he could communicate.
Yeah, and he also talked to the ocean, didn't
yeah.
he, Lord Ram? See, now this is the example of another kind of a pious soul. A pious soul who has an actual faith. But how about the persons who are born in the very hard, materialistic Kali Yuga cultures of the West or other places? Can they trust these things, or do they think, oh, this is just what the old ladies say? What do you think?
Sounds like an Aesop's fable.
A fable, yeah. Because we know everything. We know everything about reality. That's how the modern materialistic mind thinks. That reality is just as I see it. What I see, it is real, and there's nothing beyond that. That is the way that the materialistic mind thinks. This is the definition of materialism, actually. That reality is what I see. And this is the scientific methodology, and this is what people in Kali Yuga are trained in, how to think like a materialist. And the conclusion of thinking like a materialist is atheism, basically. Because, do you see God? Now, the irony, of course, is a person who loves Krishna, who loves God, he does see God everywhere. But the materialist, who doesn't have love for Krishna in his heart, he doesn't see Krishna anywhere. So which one is right? So the atheists and the devotees will always argue. One will say, I'm right. And the other will say, no, I'm right. No, I'm right. And one will pull out the Ramayana, the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita is that evidence. The other one will pull out Science Today magazines and prove that statistics show this and that and this and that. So how do we know?
For example, is it understandable that atheists or people who don't know truth will see that way because of the four defects? They can't help but see like that.
No, they can't help but see like that. Because that's the vision that is born out of their consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we could say preach to them, or how do we preach to sometimes the little atheist within us? If there happens to be one. Can anyone say that they know everything that exists on all different levels? The ant thinks that he sees reality. The monkey thinks he sees reality. An elephant thinks he sees reality as it is. And the human, he sees everything? Would anyone say that? Would any human being say, I see everything exactly in a real way? No. So everyone will accept that there's more to reality than that they see. How much more? How much more is there? The materialistic person cannot say. How much more than what I see exists? Just like how many colors of light in the light spectrum. You know, how many colors are there? But we only, with our eyes, we only see one thing. There are animals who can see at night. There are so much more waves in the spectrum than we can perceive. There's a whole universe existing in our body, practically speaking, that's continuously going on. And there's so much incredibly complex things going on in our own body that we don't see. We're not even aware of it, but that are going on. And this is a scientific type of talk, but we're not even aware of it. What to speak of in the macrocosm of outer space, etc. So no one should be so proud to think that they're perceiving the totality of reality and be so convinced. So the greatest scientists, they're always humble. The great scientists are humble. It's the little scientists that are proud. The little, and what did Prabhupada call them? Like Dr. Frog. You know the story of Dr. Frog? You must have heard the story of Dr. Frog who lived in his well. You know that story? And one day, do you know the story of Dr. Frog? You know the story of Dr. Frog? Of course. You know the story. Everyone knows the story. You don't know the story of Dr. Frog. It's hard to believe. He lived in a well. Huh?
Philippines.
Which one?
A witch doctor frog, yes. He's a witch doctor frog. This one. Baladev, you must tell him the story of Dr. Frog who lived in the well. He's very proud. And then another frog came who's just seen the ocean. And when he came and told Dr. Frog, I've just seen the ocean and there's so much water. The Dr. Frog in the well very proudly said, oh, there's so much water in the ocean? You mean it's twice as much water as in my well? He said, no, you don't understand. It's, the ocean is huge. You mean it's four times as much water in the ocean than my well? No. The ocean is huge. It's unlimited. You mean it's 10 times as much water? Is in my will. He just doesn't have the ability to conceive. He cannot conceive of what the ocean is. Because he's judging everything by his own experience. So Prabhupada ends this purport by saying, we're talking about the determination of the sparrow and the faith of the sparrow. Similarly, the practice of yoga, especially bhakti yoga and Krishna consciousness, may appear to be a very difficult job. This is your point. But if anyone follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help. For God helps those who help themselves. Next verse. Also, this is really describing yoga. Gradually, step by step, one should become situated in a trance by means of intelligence, sustained, strengthened by full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on the self alone and should think of nothing else. Then yato yato nishtalati manas tanshanamastiram tatas yato tatamye tad atmani eva vasam nayet. From wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Don't try to make your mind peaceful by giving it what it wants. That's a tendency, that's what the mind will tell you. Oh, I just want this, just, you can make me satisfied by just give me what I want. But it's more like pouring fuel, diesel fuel on a fire. The fire never becomes satisfied. The yogi whose mind is fixed on me, Krishna says, verily, truly attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. So now he's talking about the determination was required, but now I'm describing what the actual goal is. Fixing on me, Krishna, then one attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. He is beyond the mode of passion. He realizes his qualitative identity with the Supreme. He realizes that he is spirit and Krishna is spirit, spiritual nature. And thus he is freed from all reactions to past deeds. Thus the self-controlled yogi, constantly engaged in yoga practice, becomes free from all material contamination, and he achieves the highest stage of perfect happiness and transcendental loving service to the Lord. Atyantam sukham asnute sukena brahma samsparsham. Atyantam sukham asnute. A true yogi. So when one, you know, what is one going to realize when one attains this very high platform? A true yogi observes me in all beings. That when he looks and sees others, he sees Krishna. Not that they are Krishna, but he sees Krishna within them. And in many ways, this point will come a little bit later, more about his vision. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. So think of what that means, that when he sees everyone, he sees Krishna in them, and he also sees every being in Krishna. Krishna's in them, and they're in Krishna. That's quite mysterious, isn't it? Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, everywhere. But it's not theoretical. It is not just philosophically he thinks in this way. But he's self-realized. He understands. He sees. And therefore, he actually sees the super soul is in everyone's heart. Sees means with his eyes. And because all of his consciousness. And he sees that everything exists, everyone exists within the super soul. For one who sees me, one who has this vision, this is a famous verse, Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam samahi pasyati tasyaham na panasyami satyamena panasyati. For one who sees me everywhere he looks, he sees Krishna. Krishna's inside of everything, and that person, or that everything or person exists within Krishna too. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Okay, what is that? I'll read that verse again. Listen carefully, and I'll ask you what your understanding or what you think of this verse. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. What does that mean?
Never enough Krishna contact.
Yes. Thank you.
Practicing the presence of Krishna.
Yes, definitely. Yes, but there's a point that no one's mentioned yet. That's interesting.
Everything in relationship to Krishna.
Huh?
Yeah,
but there's still one point that's very especially interesting, huh?
Internal connection.
Yes, that's definitely there. But there's another point. There's a point that's a little bit different. Everything is with everyone. That point I didn't see in there, but it's an interesting point. Everything is with everyone. That's true. That's true. Because that's everything. I'm just trying to think of how to make this one true. Because Krishna is in everyone and he's everything. Of course.
We're a bit lost right now.
Because you're not seeing Krishna in it. But you don't have, see, this is the point that I would like to make. Listen again. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, looking and seeing every Krishna everywhere and everything exists in him simultaneously, I am never lost. In other words, this is what everyone emphasized, that person is always seeing Krishna. But here he also says, Satyamena Pranashyati, nor is he ever lost to me. Say again, please.
He's in the sight of Krishna.
Yes, that's also there. Not only are you seeing Krishna, but Krishna is also seeing you. So that.
Does that mean Krishna's not seeing us now?
But he's got his mind elsewhere, so to speak. He's doing other things. Because he's neutral. He sees with the neutrality of a judge, samoham savabhuteshu. But he sees differently the one who's conscious of him. He sees that person more like a son, like a child.
Intimacy, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Prabhupada says in the purport, an intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. It goes both ways.
Mm.
So we'll read from Prabhupada's purport. A person in Krishna consciousness certainly sees Lord Krishna everywhere, and he sees everything in Krishna. Such a person may appear to see all separate manifestations of the material nature, but in each and every instance he is conscious of Krishna, knowing that everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Nothing can exist without Krishna, and Krishna is the Lord of everything. This is the basic principle of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the development of love of Krishna, a position transcendental even to material liberation. At this stage of Krishna consciousness, beyond self-realization, the devotee becomes one with Krishna in the sense that Krishna becomes everything for the devotee, and the devotee becomes full in loving Krishna. An intimate relationship between the Lord and the devotee then exists. At that this stage, Lord Krishna never disappears from the sight of the devotee. nor does the devotee ever lose sight of the Lord. In the case of a yogi who sees the Lord as Paramatma within the heart, the same applies. Such a yogi turns into a pure devotee and cannot bear to live for a moment without seeing the Lord within himself. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. And so this is describing the stage of trance. Continuously, always, consciousness focused fully on Krishna. Yeah, just wait one moment. There's one more verse in there. And then we'll stop. Because Arjuna, after Krishna explains the practice of yoga, it's so strict and so focused and everything like that, and the mind is completely under control, Arjuna is going to say, "Oh, Madhusudana, the system of yoga which you have summarized appears impractical and unendurable to me. For the mind is restless and unsteady. I don't think I can't do it. I'm a warrior." But before we read that verse, we'll read the verse before it. "He is a perfect yogi. By comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna." So his vision, Arjuna's vision, should be equal to everyone. A devotee should be kind to everywhere and do welfare work for everyone. And Prabhupada speaks in his purport about this, about how important Krishna consciousness is. Okay. See what a question?
I was trying to understand this earlier verse where we see Krishna in everyone and everyone in Krishna. I was thinking whether to understand it like this, that person sees both the energies, he sees the spiritual energy and the material energy. He sees the spiritual energy in the form of Paramatma within everybody. He sees Krishna in everybody. And the other one, when he sees everyone in Krishna, he sees the material energy, everyone is situated in the material energy. So he sees simultaneously both.
The material energy and the spiritual energy. Yes, that could be one way of understanding it, a very nice way. How there is nothing separate in existence from Krishna, who is the absolute truth. And everyone is situated
in the material energy.
I know, I understand what you're saying. And therefore, when he sees the material energy, he doesn't see it as separate from Krishna. He sees it as... See, because the material energy is ultimately not material. Because the material energy is it's a kind of energy from Krishna, but when we see it as separate from Krishna, then it is called material, and that which makes us see it separate from Krishna is called Maya, that which is not, because nothing can in fact be separate from Krishna. So when one sees the material energy in its relationship with Krishna, then this is the vision. Because why is the material energy working the way it's working? It works in a very specific way and very consistently. Mm-hmm. The trees always face the sun. And the birds fly according as high as they have their capacity, and the mosquitoes do what mosquitoes do, and the air moves and the seasons turn and change, and the sun rises and the moon sets, and why is all this going on? And who's enforcing this kind of order? So one could say, well, this is just the laws of material nature. And there's not necessarily an orderer behind that. But we don't see that in existence, that things just happen without, in an organized way, without an orderer. We don't see that. No one has that experience. In your school, is it relatively organized? No? It's relatively disorganized? In what sense?
They try to organize, but we don't.
I noticed you said we don't let them, as opposed to they don't let them, meaning the students. So if they weren't there, would it be more organized or less organized? I mean, if the administration of the school colors wasn't there, would it be more organized or less organized? Then it would be organized if there were no students in the school. Very easy to administer. The point being that when there is something that has, why isn't it completely organized? You don't let it. So what does that mean? What does that imply? Okay, but what does that imply? That they don't have control. That means that the controllers don't have enough power to keep the controlled under control, right? Students under control. But what if there's a system where everyone is under control? So that means that the controller has complete power, not limited power. Yes or no? So what is the conclusion you reach from this example? That Krishna has, because will say that they're free and independent of the laws of nature? Who will stop getting older? Even you're going to get older. You could say, I don't want to get older than 19 or 20 or 21 or 22 or 20. But it happens. You have to force. Material nature is unstoppable. So who is making the nature unstoppable? When you talk about someone has a nature, you're talking about someone has a nature. So there's nature and someone. So whose nature is this that's so unstoppable in this world? So that person is all-powerful. So if he's all-powerful, he has the quality, at least the quality of being all-powerful, so why do we think he has no other qualities? So he's all-powerful, and what other qualities does he have? What other qualities, just watching material nature, can we understand that the Supreme Controller has?
He's artistic.
He's artistic. What else?
He likes landscape and trees and outdoors.
He also likes indoors, because there's indoors, yeah. But yes?
He likes variety.
He likes variety. What other? Because he's
an exquisite taste.
Yeah, he has great taste. Yes? What other qualities?
He's
colorful. We're all going on the artistic side.
That's what he wants.
He tells you he's very independent. He's the independent controller. He's also incredibly intelligent because he does things in very subtle and complicated ways. And he makes it look very easy and simple.
He's a good organizer.
He's a great organizer.
He's reliable.
Huh?
Very reliable.
Yeah, very reliable. What other qualities does he have? So we're talking about, so we're starting to come up with a
he likes a good fight.
How do you get that from the, he likes to observe a good fight?
Well, he likes a good fight. There's always fighting going on.
Yeah, so he likes it or we like it.
It goes on in the spiritual world as well.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying that
it's a rasa.
But we're talking about what kind of qualities can we understand about that supreme control exists from observing the material world. Some of his qualities. But you can't observe all of them.
He's a big cheater.
Huh?
He's a big cheater.
Okay, now you can explain to me when you look at the material world and watch how it's fully organized, how that shows that he's a big cheater.
Because I'm getting an illusion. What is an illusion in nature is a reality.
He's a magician. Okay, like that.
He's very compassionate.
Where do you see compassion? Because some people look out and they see cruelty. Why do you see compassion?
Because once you understand, you realize that, like I see myself that I was such a arrogant and, you know, but now I see that if it gives me such realization, I can become humble. And so there was everywhere I was in the center.
Everywhere you were in?
In the center.
That's interesting, isn't it, that he's compassionate. And other people are going to see him as cruel. So that's one of the main arguments that the Western theology uses against the existence of God. We call it the problem of evil. How could an all-powerful God let evil exist and so many terrible things happen in this world?
He's compassionate by giving us the holy name.
Right, but I'm saying that one person will see one thing and another person will see another. One person will see compassion. And one person will see that he's given me the opportunity to change my vision. That means he's very individual in his dealings because different people have such different realizations. Quite interesting. Any other qualities?
64, it's like 64 more.
Well, which one do you see right now?
Tolerant.
He's tolerant. Huh?
Beauty.
Where do you see Krishna's beauty?
Well, it's like what Prabhupada wants to left. The land is so beautiful, imagine the creator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prabhupada also said, some people appreciate the painting and others appreciate the painter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is better, to appreciate the painting or the painter? Why? Because it's come from him. Something beautiful has come from him, so imagine how beautiful he is. All that beauty is existing within him. And that's how Krishna ends the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that yad yad vibhuti mat satvam srimad urjitam evava, that everything that you see that is beautiful, that is and opulent, it is just coming from, it's a spark, and I am on the fire, a spark of my splendor. I'm a blazing fire. And this is what you think is beautiful, is a spark, so just imagine how beautiful Krishna is. Imagine how intelligent Krishna is. It takes so much intelligence to design a from a human being in this world. It takes so much intelligence to
design a name card.
Are you designing name cards now? A name card.
Yeah. Yeah, just this little thing with a name on it takes so much time and intelligence.
What are the forms that they give you when you go to somewhere? It takes so, they have so many people designing forms. And then what to speak of designing a brain. Now, and the more the scientists, the more that the scientists study the brain, they're more and more amazed by how complicated it is and how wonderful it is and how it keeps, it's one of the only organs that can, that keeps growing and can, and it find, if some part gets broken, it can go a different way like that. The brain is so complicated. Amazing, impossible. And different parts have different functions and this and that. Okay. So to try to understand the personality through the practice of yoga, and even practice yoga too, it's very difficult, Arjuna says, because the mind is so difficult to control. That's where we've ended. He even says it's unendurable. The mind is restless. It's unsteady. Now I want to do it with great determination. And in 10 minutes or 5 minutes or an hour or 2 hours or tomorrow, I may feel exactly the opposite. So I'll start with that tomorrow. Okay, remember, we'll keep the key there.